Last week, we started a series called Family Portrait, and this week we want to continue. And as you look at the life of Moses, you will see that there isn't quite the same information on Moses in terms of the generations that preceded him and the generations that followed him. So today will be a little bit different, Family Portrait. I've titled it, as you can see in the bulletin, Moses from a Royal Adoption to a Humble Leader. And in my notes, because I got a little long for the bulletin, I added, Listening to God. But before we go there, and I'd like to read something that might parallel a situation that Moses found himself. And this is a letter by Martin Luther King Jr. that he wrote in August 1963. He was put in prison because there was he had been involved in a nonviolent march against the rules that segregated the blacks and the whites. And this is in southern United States, and this is called a letter from the Birmingham jail. Now, this is not the whole letter. The whole letter is a long, long letter, and you can find it on the internet if you Google letter from Birmingham jail. But this is a part that I think speaks most clearly to us. And what happened was there were a number of pastors in churches, and these were white pastors, who asked Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. to wait a while before he would, let some of these changes come in a normal way. And so this letter is in response to the letter they had written him. And so he says, "We have waited for more than 340 years for our constitutional and God-given rights. The nations of Asia and Africa are moving with jet-like speed toward gaining political independence, but we still creep at horse and buggy pace toward gaining a cup of coffee at a lunch counter. Perhaps it is easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait. But when you have seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse and kick and even kill your black brothers and sisters, when you see the vast majority of your 20 million Negro brothers smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television, and see tears welling up in her eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to color kids, and see ominous clouds of inferiority beginning to form in her little mental sky, and see her beginning to distort her personality by developing an unconscious bitterness toward white people. When you have to concoct an answer for a five-year-old son who is asking, Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean? When you take a cross-country drive and find it necessary to sleep night after night in the uncomfortable corners of your automobile because no motel will accept you. When you are humiliated day in and day out by the nagging signs reading white and colored. And when your first name becomes nigger and your middle name becomes boy, however old you are, and your last name becomes John, and your wife and mother are never given the respected title Mrs. When you are harried by day and haunted by night, by the fact that you are a Negro, living constantly a tiptoe stance, never quite knowing what to expect next, and are plagued with inner fears and outer resentments, and when you are forever fighting a degenerating sense of nobodiness, then you will understand why we find it hard to wait." Now let's think back many, many years before this. And Moses, after the story that was read today, finds himself in the wilderness. And he's out there, and he's in this wilderness, and I've imagined what it would be like for Moses to write a letter back to home to let them know what had happened. And so this is my imagination speaking, just so you know. And he's found this oasis in the wilderness, and he may not even know exactly where he is. He's sort of in the area of Midian. And so he writes to his parents, and he puts this letter in a caravan that's going back to Egypt. And he says, "To my dear parents, to Aaron and Miriam, I have had a privileged upbringing. I thank you, Mum and Dad, for not killing me by having me thrown into the Nile when I was born. Rather, you put me in a little basket, and the princess found me in the Nile River and adopted me into her family. I remember a lot of things you taught me before becoming part of the royal family, as this was sanctioned by the princess. However, growing up in the palace was amazing. The education, the food, meeting great leaders from around the world, I soon forgot where I came from and the values that I saw lived out in your lives. It was not hard to adjust to all the abundance that I experienced in the palace. You might ask why I'm writing this letter to you from this strange oasis. Perhaps you have already heard what happened. I just want you to know from my perspective so that you hear the truth. This past number of weeks have been treacherous as I've wandered through this wilderness. It's been hot, hot and hotter. The thirst has always been on my mind. There is a well here, so I've had a lot to drink. And as I was resting and recovering from this long journey, some women came by to water their animals. And as they were watering their animals, a number of men brought their animals here and created a commotion so these women could not water their flock. I took charge and made sure these women could give their flocks a drink first. I must have created some impression on them as they have gone to talk to their father to get permission to invite me to their home. So before they come back, I want to send this letter to you. Having grown up in the Egyptian palace, I was sheltered from what was happening to my people. I had forgotten that we were slaves and been slaves for many, many years. That the reason for slavery was that we were a threat to the Egyptians just because there were a lot of us. The truth came back to me one day when I was walking about and I saw an Egyptian treating one of our Hebrew men in a most horrendous way. It was humiliating and degrading. My anger and rage took hold of me, and I attacked him and killed him. I really did not mean to kill him, but rather wanted him to stop. As I fought, my training was no match for him. And with one or two blows, I killed him. Then to top it off, the next day I was wandering around as well and saw two Hebrew men fighting. And when I talked to them and asked them why they were fighting, they turned on me and wondered if I would kill one of them. And then I heard that Pharaoh was after me to kill me, and I had to run away. So I'm on the run for my life. I've run away from Pharaoh, and in the process, I've run away from you, my family, and my people. I'm not sure what the future holds, only that I cannot live in Egypt. It's too dangerous for me to live in Egypt. I also know that if I went back to Egypt, I would put your lives at risk as well. There is a sense that I wanted to set my people free. We have been under the heavy hand of Pharaoh long enough. What a disappointment. I feel like I have failed you, I have failed my people, and I cannot contribute to this fight as a fugitive. The family is calling me to come and stay with them, so I must go. I miss the palace a little bit, but more than that, I miss you, my family. I'm not sure when I will be writing the next letter to you. A caravan will be taking this letter to you. I hope it reaches you. Love from your son and brother, Moses. So about 40 years later, Moses writes another letter. And this again is from the oasis in Midian. It's been a long 40 years since I wrote the last letter. From time to time, the caravans travel from Egypt to Midian, bring some personal news. I heard that mom and dad had passed away some time ago. I heard that life has not been easy for you. As a matter of fact, it has become more difficult. Perhaps you have not heard directly from me that I got married to this amazing daughter of Jethro, and her name is Zipporah. It's like I adopted this family, and this family adopted me. Family life has been great. We have two sons, and the first one I named Gershom, which means I have become an alien in a foreign land. The second son's name is Eliezer, which means my father's glory, my help, and my helper. He saved me from the sword of Pharaoh. I have become a shepherd to look after the family sheep, family flock of sheep. And this is the reason why I'm writing you. I'm on the mountain. I was on the mountain of God looking after my sheep as usual. And out of nowhere, this bush caught fire, and the fire burned without burning up the bush. So I went closer and closer to look. And when I got so close that I could feel the heat, a voice out of nowhere said, "Moses, don't come any closer. Take off your shoes. You're on holy ground." You can imagine that I was confused and shaking, wondering what this was all about. And then the voice said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." And when I heard God speaking, I tried to bury my face because I was afraid to look at God. The message that I received was crazy, extraordinary. The Lord said, "I have seen the suffering of my people in Egypt, and have heard their cry for deliverance, and I have gone down and I have come down to rescue them and take them from slavery to a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And Moses, I'm sending you to bring the Israelites out of Egypt." Well, that got my attention, and I interrupted the conversation and asked, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring these people out of Egypt?" And God went on, "This will be a sign to you that you'll come back and worship me on this mountain." You can be sure that this message was out of this world, and it was the last thing I wanted to do. I mean, I tried once and failed. What would be the guarantee that deliverance would work this time? To be sure, I continued with questions for God, as I was not going to take this assignment without some convincing. So I asked him, "Well, who should I say send me?" And he said, "I am who I am. You are to say, 'I am has sent you.' And include that the God of your father, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has sent me to you." God went on to give a lot of instructions, but I was still stubborn and wanted some more answers. What if they do not listen to me? And God gave me two signs. One, that my staff would turn into a snake, and when I pick it up, it would be a staff again. And the second one was, when I put my hand into the coat and pull it out, it would be leprous. And when I put it back in and bring it back, it would be normal. I had one final question to ask of God. I'm not a very good speaker. Words just don't come to me. And I'm going to take these people out, you will have to find another spokesperson. And guess what, Aaron? You are included in this plan. For God said that you will be this spokesperson. The wait time has been long enough, and now God is going to act. And this will be an act of God as never, ever seen before. So, I'm coming back to Egypt to do something I had left long time ago. Only this time, God has adopted me. And that adoption includes leading God's people out of Egypt. I never dreamed it could ever happen in this way. I'm sending this letter by a fast-moving caravan, and you should get it before I see you in Egypt. We're already making preparations for this journey. Love your brother, Moses. Family portrait of Moses. Perhaps the biggest theme that came through me, to me, as I was thinking of a family portrait of Moses was the theme of adoption. Moses, mother put him up for adoption, in a sense, by putting him in the river. And it was at that point that the princess found him and adopted him into her family. And so Moses was shaped by two realities to begin with, his home and the palace. The princess allowed his mother to care for him in the early years of his life. And strangely enough, in this process, he was protected by the very people that were persecuting or making his people slaves. It's an interesting thought. There's so many differences in these two realities. The Israelites believed in one God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Pharaoh was considered to be the God of the people of Egypt. The midwives, interestingly enough, really had a tremendous faith in God. Because the midwives did not obey Pharaoh's edict. And so these babies, especially the boys, the edict came twice actually, that they would kill these babies in birth or throw them into the Nile later. And they just simply said, I'm sorry, we can't, these babies are born so fast that we have no way of killing them, in a sense. And so the midwives listened to God profoundly in this story. But Pharaoh was the ultimate ruler, and the Hebrew people remained the slaves. The second adoption for Moses, and I'm using my words here, the Bible doesn't say that, but was into the family of Jethro. And it's interesting, it's not a very long part of the story, but Moses goes there, a total stranger to this land and this family. He didn't know the customs, he didn't know the people. And he ends up at the invitation of Jethro to marry his daughter. And so he's there and he has two children, as already was mentioned. He embraced the family business, he became a shepherd. And his life seemed to be pretty normal, right? He had found his new identity. He had found that he could live here and he could survive and it was okay. And then I think the third adoption was into God's family to fulfill the mission of God. And here I'm using my words again. But in a sense, he was adopted into God's family to do a mission specifically for God. The call of God at the burning bush was profound, was amazing, just totally out of nowhere it came to him. And on the way to Egypt, his sons had to be circumcised so that they would be part of the Jewish nation. Throughout this experience, he had to listen to God. And this is the theme that repeats itself again and again. Throughout this deliverance and this journey in the wilderness, Moses listened to God. And you get the sense that he's this humble leader. And you wonder, how can listening to God and his sense of humility create such a powerful impact? And so I want to spend a few moments just thinking of Moses as one who listened to God. So imagine for a moment the power struggle. God has said, I want you to go to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go. And he shows his signs. And it didn't happen until the 10th time where the angel of death came over the place. But Moses had to listen to God to not only to do these huge, to confront Pharaoh, but to get the people of the Israelites on side. How was he going to convince them? How was he going to convince them that God had spoken to me? And I think all these plagues also were helpful to realize, you know what? Moses is speaking on behalf of God. And so that's one place. The Exodus and all the instructions that surrounded the Exodus, Moses had to listen to God. you know, this is what you need to do. You need to put the blood of a lamb around the doorway. You need to make this kind of bread. Be ready to go. And all the specific instructions. Moses listened to God. And then when you think of the opening of the Red Sea, this was another critical experience. And they had Red Sea before them and Pharaoh's armies behind them. What was he going to do? And again, Moses listened to God. And he put up his rod and the sea parted. And they walked through on dry ground and got to the other side. And the water came back and drowned the Pharaoh's army. You wonder, wow, that's powerful, just learning to listen to God. And then you have the Ten Commandments. That is profound. He goes up to this mountain and he gets the Ten Commandments from God. Commandments that not only included the worship of God, but how people are to relate to each other. And he brings those two so powerfully together, listening to God. And then establishing a center of worship. And what is that worship supposed to look like? The worship in the center of their camp was a tabernacle, and each part of the tabernacle had some significant part to it. Moses, and even the creating of the tabernacle, people used their gifts and their skills in creating the tabernacle. And then addressing the issues of food and water in the camp. You can imagine these guys were camping through the wilderness. They had no preparation, no caravan meeting them with extra food along the way, and they begin to complain. Oh, we're thirsty, Moses. How are we going to get something to drink? Or we're hungry. What are we going to eat? And so Moses listened to God, and God provided. How would they know they were supposed to move from one place to another? There's a Shekinah cloud that helped them move. And one of the interesting parts in this story is that there was a tent of meeting. And this tent was on the outside of the camp, but it was a very special tent. It's the place where Moses would go and listen to God. And it talks about as he goes into this, as Moses goes in, everybody puts their attention to Moses and they worship God because they know that when Moses is in there, he's listening to God. And throughout the Old Testament, through the Pentateuch especially, you get all the different rules of what it means to live together as a people, to understand and how they can live together. And so listening to God is so powerful. And as I think of the adoption process that Moses went through, when he came to that part, he was probably at a place where he could listen to God as no other time. He was at a place where he said, okay, this is my mission. This is where I need to go. I need to learn to listen to God. So what can we say about adoption? That's sort of the theme that comes through here. And these main themes, I have found a number of different places on the internet that kind of highlight these themes. So one theme in adoption is grief and separation and loss. This is always an issue. People, kids who are adopted and adults who've been adopted, always feel these feelings of grief, of separation and loss. Many years ago in a church setting, one of the members of our church didn't realize that he was adopted until he was 50 years old. You can imagine how traumatic that was for him. He always thought he was part of this family and his parents didn't tell him until he was 50 years old. And then he had kind of a crisis come in at that time. But the adopted children always feel the fear of abandonment, even from current families. And sometimes, this is something that is always with them. Okay, so it's not just settled because they're in a secure home. They always feel that sense of abandonment. They're also self-esteem and identity. As I went through the three stages of Moses, you can see that there was an identity shift in him, right? And he struggled with that identity, found it. Finally, when he understood that he was adopted by God, I'm using that language, he understood who he was in God's plan. And another thing that I think that adopted children face is that attachment issues. Often school challenges, mental health challenges. These are things that that adopted children feel. It's not saying that others don't feel that, but it's saying specifically as they look at children, adoption is a unique kind of chosen child. So that's one family portrait theme that comes through in the story of Moses. Another portrait theme that comes through here is that Moses allowed members of both sides of his family to influence him. Miriam was a prophet, Aaron became the high priest, and he allowed both sides, and later on in Exodus 18, they had come through the Red Sea and so on, and he saw, and Jethro came to visit him. And Jethro saw that in the morning Moses had a long line of people. And he said, Moses, what are you doing? Well, I'm helping to make decisions for these people. They're struggling with something and they have to make decisions. And I could just imagine Jethro sitting back there and saying, oh, I wonder, there must be a better way to do this. And so at a time he took him aside and said, Moses, how about doing this? How about you divide the people from hundreds and fifties and tens and put responsible men at that time, responsible people in charge, and let these people deal with the lesser issues, and then you deal with the big ones. And so he allowed Jethro, his father-in-law, to influence him. He allowed Aaron and Miriam to influence him. And I think that's an important factor in a family portrait, especially for a husband and wife. You know, if you don't allow each other to influence each other, it can become either controlling or it becomes sort of negating. And this is an important part in one of the principles for making marriage work by John Gottman is this principle that allow your spouse to influence you. And that is an important element in family life. So I just wanted to bring that as another important family portrait theme that comes out of out of Moses' life. Another important theme that comes out of this is that names are important. You know, last week we talked about the intergenerational kinds of things from one generation to another. If a child has a name that is a significant name in some of the genogram or the history, there's a chance that that child will be seen in the context of that person. And eventually that child will have to break away from that, but that's one of the issues that when we as parents parent our child, we also have that other name in mind when we oversee, when we think of that child. And so Moses, his name was I drew him out of the water. Gershom, his name meant I have become an alien in a foreign land. And Eliezer, my father's God has been my helper. So names are important. In the Old Testament, names are very important. A number of years ago, I was counseling a person, and she came back one day and she said, "You are true to your name." I was taken back. Really? Yeah, your name Gerald. That's my. If I show you my license, that's my name. I go by Gary as well. But she said that means spear carrier, and when you worked with me on that issue, you hit it right on the mark. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'd never thought of that before, right? But names are important, and that's really important. So that's another element that comes out of this in the family portrait. Another one that comes through is sibling rivalry, and we saw that last week in the life of Abraham, but here it takes a little bit of a different twist. And this story is found in Numbers chapter 12. And this is an interesting story because Aaron and Miriam, and I don't know how it happened, but they got a little upset at Moses because Moses had married a Cushite woman, a woman who was not from the Hebrew people. And they thought, well, how can God only speak to you, Moses? See, you married a Cushite woman, and how come God doesn't speak to other people? And so Moses took them into the tent of meeting, and God had a word with all three of them. And what happened in that, as they walked out of there, is that Miriam had leprosy. And so Moses had to become the mediator and say, God, please give her life back. And after a week of being on the outside of the camp, she was included back in. Sibling rivalry can be huge. And sometimes it can take the form of racism when a person marries someone outside the expectations of their parents, someone from a different culture, a different background. And that can have devastating effects as well if that person is not loved and accepted. And so we learn something here from Moses, the life of Moses, that God did not ever say to Moses, you know, you married the wrong person. But when it came that he was challenged on this matter, God stepped in and protected Moses. And so I think we have to realize that this is really an important part of a family portrait, is how we embrace a spouse or one of our kids' spouses, their differences. How do we embrace them as people? This is huge. And so we learn that from the story of Moses as well. So, what can we take away from Moses? What can we take away from this story? That while adoption has its issues, there is a lot of space for resiliency and finding identity. When Carol's mother passed away, Carol's family, a brother and sister were adopted. So I don't have that experience personally. Carol grew up with some of that. And when Carol's mother passed away, Rick, who is adopted, he gave a tribute to his mother. And it was an amazing tribute, how she had helped with his identity and become the person who he is. That was so powerful, that he could give that tribute to his mother. The only sad part is he could have given that while she was still alive, right? And that would have, I think, impacted her so beautifully. Names can give strength and help us to embrace our identity. All of us have different names. And names become the person. They aren't just a name, they become the person. And that is so powerful in family portrait. Who are you? Your name, but you are obviously more than just the letters in a name. You are that person. And that's so important. The story of Moses is about deliverance and new life. He was leading the people from slavery to a new land. And so in that process, Moses before went through a wilderness. The people went through a wilderness. The wilderness helped define them, helped clarify what they needed to do, who they were. And I think in all of our experiences, we've probably been through a wilderness, a time where we sense, you know, God feels like he's far away. But it's at those times that God can reach in and shape and mold us to become the people who listen to God. I don't think Moses would have ever listened to God the same way had he not been through that wilderness and been at a time where he was away from the work. And so sometimes when we're struggling and we're going through what we feel like is a wilderness, God is still there. God is beside us. He shares in our suffering. He shares in our concerns, even though we don't feel him and know him like we would like to. God is still there. And I want to end on this. When we come to the New Testament, what does John say? He talks about Jesus inviting people to become children of God. Paul talks about that we are adopted into the family of God. And so while adoption we might think is out there, adoption is critical for all of us. Because in one sense, we're all adopted into this family. God has chosen us. God loves us, and we have responded to this love. And we've been adopted by embracing Jesus into this family. And so all of us find our identity some way in our love for Jesus. All of us find our identity in how God has shaped and formed us to be sons and daughters of his. And so this story, while we may not experience adoption, it really touches base with all of us. We're all part of this community. We're adopted in here. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for the family portrait of Moses. We have lots to learn, lots to understand. But help us to know that you are the one that leads us so that we can listen to you. Listen to your voice and be enriched by this family that we are part of, because you have adopted us into your family. In Jesus' name, amen.